Welcome to Online for Authors, where I, Terry M. Brown, author of character-driven fiction and host of the podcast, introduce readers to characters they'd love to invite to lunch by interviewing authors, discussing their books, learning about the writing process, and even, on occasion, chatting live with a panel of authors to discuss topics relevant to both readers and writers. My guest today on the Online for Authors podcast is Carol Pearson, author of the book 10 Little Rules for a Blissy Life. In my book review, I stated that Carol wrote 10 Little Rules for a Blissy Life after her world, in a matter of 8 weeks, fell apart. Her daughters were moving out to start their own lives, her husband had lost his job, they realized their marriage was over, and her own income stream was destroyed by her business partners. Despite being broke, homeless, and dealing with interpersonal relationship issues, Carol was the happiest she had ever been. Why? She had begun living her life by her own rules rather than the rules given to her by her parents, society, and the shoulds residing in her head. Carol offers readers the 10 rules that helped her navigate through these big changes and offers great questions and journaling space to help you find where you might be stuck. The best part is that these are merely a starting point. She encourages readers to dig deep and discover their own rules for being happy in this life. This is a perfect book for anyone going through change and wanting to figure out how to do so gracefully. Welcome today to Online for Authors. We have Carol Pearson, who is the author of 10 Little Rules for a Blissy Life. Welcome, Carol.
Thanks, Terry. It is so fun to be here. I'm already having a great time.
I am so glad that you were able to come with us. But before we get really into things, let's do just like a quick elevator speech about what your book, 10 Little Rules for a Blissy Life, is about.
Okay, great. Elevator speech. So I wrote this book after a series of cascading events over the course of 8 weeks, way back in 2009. And I found myself completely in a foreign landscape, like somebody had taken my snow globe and just slammed it upside down. So I started digging. And through the course of digging, I kind of reevaluated my life and how I'd been living and came up with all these rules that were now, I'm going to embrace these as my rules for moving forward. And a girlfriend of mine at the time said, "You're broke, you're homeless, your kids are barely speaking to you, you're divorced, you're broke, did I mention that? Yeah. And you're happier than I've ever seen you. So what's your secret?" And she said, "You got to write a book." And so I did. That was the start of 10 Little Rules. And now we have 7 authors and 8 different books and another one coming on. And it's a whole series. So it's been amazing.
Yeah. So this all came about because you said you had like a crash.
Yeah.
Almost a midlife crisis kind of thing where you just like woke up one morning and said, "What the heck's going on here?"
Well, it was that I'd already been sort of in that crisis. Is it crisis or is it rebirth or is it growth or what is this? And
right.
Then within 8 weeks, my oldest daughter moved out on her own. My youngest daughter was getting ready to go to college, graduate high school. My husband and I of 24 years decided our marriage no longer works. He got fired. My business partners went nuts and destroyed my income stream, all within the course of a couple of months.
Wow.
And so, yeah, it was a crisis at the time, but it was really the biggest gift because I was able to really reevaluate what is going on in my life and how do I want my next half to look.
Right. Sometimes I know that has been true for me. I lived in an emotionally abusive relationship for 14 years, and I had drawn one line in the sand, just one. And if you cross that line, I'm done. And he crossed that line because that's what emotionally abusive people do. And I left. And now I look back at that and I think, oh, thank goodness he crossed that line, because everything from that point forward has been different. Mm-hmm. And better and happier and all of those things. And so it's that same kind of thing where sometimes in the moment, it feels like your whole world has just been ripped to shreds. And then when you have a chance to kind of walk out of that, it's like, oh, yeah, well, it was ripped to shreds, but it needed to be.
It needed to be. burned to the ground.
Yeah.
I remember you sharing that story when we met in Southport a couple of years ago, and I could see it in your face, the way you lit up when at the horrible point of your life. It really was a gift.
Yes. And I often, I got out of that relationship in 2017. And so 7 years later, I still wake up some mornings and think, oh, thank you for crossing that line. Oh, I'm so glad you crossed that line. You know, and it's crazy because when I made the line, I didn't want him to cross it. And I made it so far. It was difficult to cross. It was not even like it was a line in the sand that was easy to trample across, you know? And so when he went across it, it felt very devastating.
Sure.
Like, my world is just in a turmoil. And then it didn't take long to realize I am better off. Wow. Now, I didn't sit down and write rules, though. I think I just kind of like bounced around for a while. So these rules, where did you get them?
You know, I've heard your discussion with an author recently about, are you a plotter or
a pantster?
Or a pantster? And I would love to say that I made this big grand plan, but I didn't. I was sitting out on my girlfriend's sun porch one morning. She was letting me live very cheap rent at her house to kind of recover from all of this.
Right.
And I had my coffee, the sun was coming in, and she had told me, you know, you need to write the book. And so I just kind of went into a deep meditation and the stuff kind of fell at me. I just had these ideas like, what am I doing differently now that makes me happy versus how I was living a year ago when I was unhappy? And I have to say, it wasn't all about my husband. It wasn't all about any one thing, you know, to break it down. It had to do everything. It had to hit the kids and the house and the jobs and the, you know, everything.
Right,
And I just started realizing, well, okay, now I'm meditating. So what does that mean? It means I'm getting to source, which means I can really listen to my heart, which means I can really understand the choices that I'm making and so on. And they just kind of, it just cascaded. And then once I had those rules sort of sketched out, I was able to go in and kind of pull examples out of my life of where this would apply. And just lucky.
So, I think that it wasn't lucky as much as it was, is you have the ability, and not everyone does. Well, I think everyone has the ability if they're willing to do it, but you had the ability to tap into your internal, you know, our minds are amazing things, and we have things in there that if we would listen to them, but we're so busy.
Right.
You know, we're so busy running from thing to thing to thing and to-do list, to-do list, to-do list, and, you know, point A to point B, that we sometimes don't stop and listen to our hearts and our minds that are telling us, you know, this isn't right. And you're like, yes, but I don't have time to deal with that right now.
Yes. Dinner's burning.
You know, I've got life to do. I can't handle this right now. Because the same thing, when I was in that relationship, I knew it wasn't a good relationship. Mm-hmm. I'm not stupid, but I didn't know what else I was supposed to do or how to do it. But I did. I just wasn't willing. It seemed big. And I think sometimes change seems too big. It's better the devil you know than the devil you don't. So you kind of were forced into the devil you don't, you know.
I was.
Bam.
I fought it.
Right.
And, you know, I was raised Irish Catholic 60s and 70s by a pretty strict set of rules on how life should be. My parents had been married forever. They were actually active in their church in engaged couples counseling, marriage encounter, the whole thing, right? So the idea of leaving my marriage, even though it wasn't, you know, wasn't that bad, right? One of those things that just unhappy here. The idea of making some choices I was now going to be making. The hardest part about all this was sitting down and talking to my parents about it, just thinking they would be judging me. They were amazing. They were open hearts, open minds. It was amazing. But, you know, you say sometimes you can't really hear what your heart's saying, and it's so true. And then sometimes you don't want to hear it.
You don't want to hear it. Yeah.
Not going to go there.
You're maybe not ready yet to go there. Like it's going to require, you know, what you went through required you to do things. You had to make changes in yourself. You didn't just write rules and then walk on. Like no. you had to learn how to live those things that you were recognizing. And that's not easy to do because it's not like you were doing it before.
Correct.
So now you have all this new stuff to do. And there are times where people aren't really ready to embrace that yet. Mm-hmm. It's too much or too big. So you have to kind of let them come to it on their own, you know.
But that's the way we design the books, where we have the author narrative and then some questions for the reader.
Yes, I loved the questions.
And then lots of journaling space, because my rules are not your rules. If you had to sit down and write your 10 rules for a blissy life, they're not going to be mine. Maybe there'll be some similarities, but we wanted the reader to say, okay, now what's bugging me? How can I apply this to me? And, you know, I have given author talks, and I remember one, there was a woman in the back row. She was eyed into me the whole time. I knew she was listening. I knew she was interested. And she got up and left. And I thought, okay, maybe your phone rang. Turns out that something struck her about her own life that was so deeply and intensely painful. And she realized in that moment, she had to make a change, that she just had to leave the room and go do something about it. And, you know, that's what I said when I went through all the challenges of learning how to self-publish books and all of this 13 years ago. Crazy. I said, if it helps one person, it's worth it.
Right.
And so I see that one person that it helped. And we're going to keep going. We're going to keep doing
absolutely.
It.
Absolutely. So my favorite of your 10 rules was number 10, which was every night, give thanks. It is something that I don't do it every night. I just try sometime during the day. Mm-hmm. I try to find something that I am thankful for, especially on crappy days.
Yes.
You know, like on good days, it's easy to find things you're thankful for. It's really, really, really easy, you know, because so many good things are happening. It's like, which of the 432 things can I pick today? But some days just aren't as good as others.
Yeah.
And some days are actually downright horrible.
Yeah.
And even on those days, you can find something, you know, and I love that. So this was like, it was like, oh, that's like my whole mantra right there is, you know, find a way. I'm a very optimistic person, even in the face of some really non-optimistic things happening. And that's one of the ways I do it is there's always good going on, even in the midst of bad things.
It's so important to remember that.
And
one thing I learned is if you can stay in the moment when something happens and not automatically label it good or bad,
right,
just is, then it's easier to move past that. You live in North Carolina.
Yes.
And we did until recently. And just one example, one of the many hurricanes we seem to have gotten over the last several years, and we're sitting in our living room and tornado sirens are going off, and then we heard this bang, crash, bang, bang. And it was the shutters ripping off the front of our house. And my thought was, I'm grateful the roof's still on.
Yes. And, you know, kind of because it was just a shutter, right?
We knew we were going to replace them anyway. We had already decided, let's wait till after hurricane season. So, you know, just if there's one piece of advice I would give to anybody who's going through something, is really try to take that moment. And maybe the only good thing you can remember is that the lady that checked you out at the supermarket said, have a great evening, or
but there's going to be something during that day. Someone did something, or you looked outside and the sunset was beautiful that day, mm-hmm. or it was warm, and so when you went to get the mail you didn't need your jacket, or like literally you can like make it find
you,
it
you had a cup of coffee
had a cup of coffee and it tasted good
yeah.
You know, that was a good cup of coffee. And I think sometimes it sounds trite to someone who's like, look, I'm suffering. What do you mean? I had a good cup of coffee. But I've just noticed for me that if I can focus on anything positive, the negative doesn't seem to have the same hold on me.
Mm-hmm. I agree with that, Terry. And it's true. There are people in dire situations, and I don't want to say you can journal your way out of.
No. I mean, you can't cup of coffee out of a bad situation.
No.
But you can help change your mindset. There's a book. I can never remember that. It was a book about someone who was in a concentration camp and they were thankful for the fleas. Have you heard this? So Tim bomb something. I can't remember. The story is that she was in a women's dormitory, and the fleas were so bad that the guards would not come in. So at night, they had relative freedom inside of their dormitory, and they would read to one another, and they had that ability to associate and feel more human. Mm-hmm. And she was always thankful for the fleas.
That's incredible.
And so even in this horrible, I mean, that's a horrible situation. That mm-hmm. is, there's nothing good about that situation. Mm-hmm. And yet she was still able to find this ability to be thankful.
It's amazing.
Yeah. And so I think that's, I just love that idea. I love mm-hmm. that idea. Which of the 10 are your favorite?
Oh, that's a tough question.
I know.
It depends on where I'm at, right?
Yeah.
Right now, number 8, create beauty. I'm in a new home, in a new area, near family. Grandbaby's one coming in a few weeks. Create beauty to me is all about setting up your life. And it can be as simple as, I really need to vacuum today, and that's going to make my home more beautiful. So I, go into it with the idea of creating beauty. I'm sewing again, which I haven't done in ages, making little dresses for the girls, planning what my gardens are going to look like in the spring. And even just putting on dinner and maybe putting a little extra garnish on the salmon when just up it up a little bit. And to me, that helps me get through the winter. You know, winters are tough, especially now that we're back north. This winter has not been easy.
When you told me you'd move back north, I thought, whew, boy, I'd be hard-pressed to find any reason I'd be going back north.
Just family is the only thing that can do it. So,
right.
But then really the main one that I always turn to when things start getting off the rails and I start feeling a little anxious or get a little down, I remember I haven't been meditating. So it's rule number 1, get to source. Because for me, and getting to source is so key that you can get out of your mind and into your heart. And whether that means meditation or just quiet listening or prayer or however you define your own path to source.
Right.
I think the more time we can spend in that space, the better our lives are going to be. We have more understanding.
I have a very difficult time meditating as defined by the world. Mm-hmm. I don't sit still well. And when I am sitting still, I can't clear my mind. My mind doesn't sit still. So the way that I find that I get to source is I go out and walk. And I go mm-hmm. out on the beach and I walk. And the first half of my walk, I'm not anywhere near source. My mind is just whirling and swirling and thoughts and lists and you know, I'm just storming along. And somewhere between the beginning of that walk and the end of the walk, I am now walking I almost feel like in time with the waves. Like mm-hmm. I have just become part of the beach, you know, and it's me and I'm it. And then that's when my mind has stopped roaring and racing and I can kind of come to terms. I come to a lot of conclusions while out on the beach, things that it's like, yeah, you know, that's really what I need to be doing. You know? and I can't get to it by sitting in a comfy chair in my house and trying the, you know, 10 minutes of quiet because my mind won't go there.
Right.
And I think that's good to know is like what does work for you? Because when you say get to source, you don't mean you have to do 10 minutes of quiet meditation.
No, you could do whatever works. Walking on the beach is also huge for me. Another odd place that really puts me immediately in source is when I'm weeding a garden and my hands are in the dirt.
Right.
And I'm just focused on kind of talking to the plant, like, where does it hurt? And something about being in contact with nature really does it, whether my feet are in the sand or my hands are in the dirt or I'm just breathing in the mountain air. It's that connection, right?
Yeah.
And yeah, a lot of people say the same thing. They can't sit still. They can't clear their minds. And so don't try something else.
Right. For me, I think it's being anywhere near water. So especially like running water, like a stream or with the ocean, with it, its movement, there's something about water and movement that I just, I don't know, like I'll be having a really stressed time and I'll think I'm going to go take a walk on the beach. And just at the point that you come up over the dune and you see the water, I feel my whole body go, and I'm not there yet. You know, I'm not to a place where I can even begin to think it, but it's like my body's going, oh, thank you. This is what we've been needing. Just, oh, good. She's going to do what we need. You know, it's just, it's crazy. But I do. I just feel the whole, oh, thank goodness.
Yeah. What's fascinating about that to me is there's scientific reasons why our bodies feel that immediate release, the ions and the, so it's not just in our heads. It's not in our hearts. It's actually in our cells, in our DNA.
Yeah, our DNA just knows this is good.
I know. You take that deep breath and you get that salt air and just, it's so good.
There's just something. And to me, waves, when I watch the ocean, especially when life seems to be overwhelming, I watch the ocean and I realize those waves are going to keep coming in and coming out. They're going to do it tomorrow and they're going to do it the day after that. They're going to do it when this problem ends and they're going to do it when the next problem starts. And it gives me, it almost balances me. It's like, okay. Everything is in the world, in the general world, everything is still working as normal.
Yes. Yes.
The waves are still going in and out.
Even if I'm in chaos.
Yes. My world may be chaos, but those waves, they're still doing their thing. Mm-hmm. They're totally unaffected by the fact that I'm, you know, out, you know. And I think that also helps me. It's almost like, okay, things may be chaotic in my world, but they're not chaotic. Mm-hmm. Like there is a space to get back to.
Yes. Yes.
You know, and there it is.
I remember one time I went into a really deep meditation and I was trying to decide if I should leave a job where I was enjoyed the work, but the atmosphere was really toxic and a lot of reasons why I should have stayed, a lot of reasons why I should have left.
Right.
So I went into this meditation and it was really vivid, almost like a dream trance I went into. And I realized I was in a line of people and we were all pushing our coffins up the hill. And I realized I don't have to be in this line. I can leave my coffin and turn to the left and walk away.
Yeah. I don't have to do this.
I don't have to do this. And I woke up like, okay, that's my answer.
Right.
I quit that day because I was in that place where I was out of my head and out of my pros and cons and the lists and
yes,
all of that,
right,
that I used
right
to make decisions, my heart said no.
Your heart already knew the answer.
Yeah. And so when we can get whatever it is in our lives where we can get to that place where we can listen to what our heart is saying, sometimes we don't want to hear it, but, you know.
Well, and mostly we don't want to hear it. Like I said, it goes back to that change. Change is not easy.
Exactly.
You know, it's not an easy thing. In fact, they've done a study, which I found really interesting, that when you even just say the word change to someone, so let's say that you're in a meeting and they say, we're going to change how we're doing things. They've put electrodes on people and like watched things. The same center that lights up for fear lights up when you say the word change.
Wow. Interesting.
Just saying it.
Interesting.
So we're wired probably from way back to be afraid of change because change means that, you know, someone could get hurt or it might not be as safe or all of those things. And so our bodies freeze up and panic and do all of the things. And so you have to really work to kind of convince yourself and your body that this change is actually going to be okay. It's good for us, you know?
Yeah.
And so when you're making those lists and you don't know which way to go and you're not listening to your heart, it's because the fear center in your brain is really loud and it's screaming, better the devil you know, better the devil you know, better the devil you know, right?
Yes, yes. You know, one of the things about the past 10 years or so of my life is I've moved quite a bit. So there's been a lot of change. And yeah, you're right. That does have an element of fear to it.
There is. What if I don't get along where I'm going? What if I don't make friends? What if I can't find another job? What if I hate the climate? What if the house that we buy is terrible? What if we can't sell the house that we're in now? What if?
All of the above.
Right.
Yeah. So rule number 9 is make life a ritual. And I think this is what the rule that helped me coast through all the, first the tremendous changes when all of this blew up. And then as we go on and, you know, making rituals, no matter what house you're in, you have your little coffee pot here and your favorite cup there. So that feels like home.
Right.
You know, whatever town you're in, the first thing I do is go get my library card and join the Friends of the Library and get involved that way. So it's sort of like you have a roadmap, even when things are entirely different.
Right. Right.
And that's where I met you, in fact, because I was on the Friends of the Library down in Southport. And so it's this kind of ritualize the things that you know bring you joy. Like one of the strange things for me every day is I make my bed. I like to fluff the pillows, get all tidy. And to me, that feels like, okay, I'm ready to start my day. Sometimes, honestly, it's not till noon, but that's okay.
It doesn't matter.
It's, you know, and for everybody has their own kind of things that make them that recenter them, I think, and get them ready to take on whatever's new and changed and scary and all of that. So it's a way to go through life accepting the change and honoring the challenge without having it completely throw you off.
I like that. So I'm curious, do you have an 11th rule? Something that didn't make your book?
Question. That's a great question. I'm going to think about that because I don't have an immediate answer.
Okay. I was just wondering because, you know, sometimes when you create something like 10 little rules, I'm the kind of person that I might have like 13. And now because we have this 10, you know, I've got to go in and figure out, well, can any of these be combined to make one rule? And, you know, is there any rule that really doesn't need to be in here? And so we're going to get rid of it. I was just curious if you had an 11th rule that you follow that didn't make your book.
I don't, but one of the other authors in our series does.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. Yeah, Wendy. And she was writing a book about her son, Hank, who has a rare disease. And so her about rules on how to survive that, you know, when your two-year-old is diagnosed with this rare disease. And she had an 11th rule. And it's very personal, but she definitely does.
Right.
That's interesting.
Right. Yeah, no, I was just curious because I have, and I think it's from having lived in the relationship I lived in, the word rules sometimes bothers me a little.
Mm-hmm.
I don't like rules and boundaries because it makes me feel like someone is trying to control what I'm doing. And so you say 10 and it's like, what if I only have 9? What if I have 11?
You do you. That's what I
do. You know, and so, yeah, there's that little, that's, I think, where that question came from for me. It's kind of like, well, what do you do if you have more?
And, you know, one of the things is we call them little rules for a reason.
Right.
Because we all grew up with rules. We've all had rules forced on us. And so, you know, we should, all of that.
All the shoulds, right.
Some little rules. And we're all about, these are our rules. Make your own. Here's the book, you know.
Right. Right. It's interesting. You're going to be on Stephanie Affinito's podcast, and she had a podcast about reading rules that made me laugh because it was things about, like, are you allowed to start a book and not finish a book?
Mm-hmm.
You know, do you have to finish a chapter before you can put the book down? Do you know, can you read more than one book at a time? Can you, and there's people who feel very strongly about these things, you know, like, oh no, if you start a book, you have to finish it.
Yeah.
You know, and so she was saying, let's challenge some of those rules. Do you really have to, you know, is it okay to, you know, and so that's, it reminds me of that when you're talking about those kinds of rules that we all do have rules we live by. Are they ours?
Are they ours? Exactly.
Because
I have guilt when I put the book down and say, nope.
Yeah. And really, why should you? All you're saying, you're not saying anything other than this book is not for me.
Right.
Is that not allowed?
Right. And, you know, maybe, like, I just read Demon Copperhead, Barbara Kingsolver. Stunning book, but I could not finish it. I had to skim the last probably quarter of the book because I knew horrible things were happening in this person's life. Who I've grown to love this person.
And I couldn't do it.
Read all
in that space.
No. Yeah. Maybe 10 years from now I can go back and read it. But it was giving me anxiety.
Yeah.
Stunning, beautiful book. But
it wasn't right something now that you needed.
Yeah.
At that moment. Yeah. And I think that's good. I like that idea. Maybe then I wouldn't feel so bad about the idea of rules if I understood that they were coming internally.
Yes, if they're your own.
So they're not Carol is demanding that I follow these 10 rules. No. It's Terry has looked into her own life and here's how she's going to live it.
Yes. And I very well might rewrite my rules in 10 years. Who knows?
Right. So that kind of leads me to, are you going to write another 10 rules?
I have one coming up in the spring, actually.
Do you?
I do. It's called 10 Little Rules for Queen Bees.
And Tell us more.
It came about because during the pandemic, my family went through a lot of epic change. We had 2 weddings, 2 babies, and 2 funerals. Lost both my parents. And then I gained 2 son-in-laws and 2 grandchildren. So it was like this epic shift of the mantle,
right?
When my mom passed, and it's like my kids said, "You're the queen bee now." I'm like, I'm not qualified. I kind of dwelled with that quite a bit and realized, okay, I have to create some rules now for how this goes, what I want my hive to look like, right? And so it's evolving into a new book. I don't really have the rules fleshed out, but it's the idea of the wisdom of the queen bee and the generosity and how we can form our hive, whether it's by blood, by marriage, by choice, how we form our own hive and thrive within that.
Oh, I love that. That's awesome. That is awesome. So if someone is listening right now and they think, oh, I have a wonderful idea for 10 little rules for whatever it is they've got, what is their next step to contact you? Like, if they want to be part of this whole thing.
I would love to hear from them. The best way is to go to 10littlerules.com. It's 10littlerules.com. And just click on the Keep in Touch page. You'll find a little link that says contact us. Just drop me an email. I answer my own mail. Would love to hear from them.
All right. And so you're like your own publishing company? Is that what you're doing?
Yeah, we've
turned... you're like a self-publishing, but you're your own little...
We call it indie publishing. Yeah.
Okay.
I started with the one book, then I'm a friend.
Then you brought on a friend.
We're a publishing company now. So
indie publishing. All right.
Indie publishing, indie authors. We're all about supporting people getting their voices out there.
Right.
And if it resonates, I'd love to hear from them.
Fantastic. Well, that's great. Anything else that is coming up for you? So you're writing the Queen Bee, 10 Little Rules for Queen Bee. Anything else that you have coming up that's exciting for you?
Yeah, we have our first male author, and it's a professional, aimed at a professional audience, 10 Little Rules for Sharing Your Story, because public speaking is a part of every job these days, and
right,
it can be terrifying, and this author is phenomenal at it. And so he's written his rules on how to connect with your audience and share your story so that it's a win-win for everybody.
How fun
about that.
Yeah.
And, you know, right now we're in a growth period. We're going to make some changes to our website and some of our branding and all sorts of good stuff. So it's going to be a busy year.
Fantastic. Is there anything else that you wish that I had asked you or that we had talked about that I haven't touched?
I just wanted to say one thing about Carrie Ann. I just finished Daughters of Green Mountain.
Did
Dam.
You? Okay.
Beautiful book.
Thank you.
And I found so much of myself in Carrie Ann as far as the struggle to accept what's changing.
Yeah.
And I wanted to give her a copy of my book and said, write it down, honey. You'll be okay.
You're going to be okay. She's such a rigid character.
Yes.
You know, where the rules, and this is what we learned, and you can't go beyond this. And the same thing I felt for her. And I think that there's a lot of me in her. Hmm. Maybe not me today, but me in the past me.
Okay. I was wondering about that.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think that we all, I don't know any woman who gets, I'm 60. I don't know how old you are. You don't have to say.
right there with you.
Yeah. And so I don't know that anyone can get to be my age where they haven't shifted, mm-hmm. where they haven't started to recognize that, you know, like I spent my early years very much living my mother's life. Mm. And I don't mean that in a bad way. I was just, this is what I was taught was to happen. And you start to recognize that some of this doesn't feel right for me. Mm-hmm. And so then you kick against it and you don't necessarily do it well. And, you know, sometimes I would do things just opposite, just to prove I could. And it wasn't good for me either, yeah. You know. And so I feel like, yeah, I think maybe we all are a little bit Carrie Ann at some point in our lives, mm-hmm. where we're so wedded to an idea. So demanding that what we're doing is right. And that mm-hmm. it's not only right for me, but it's right for every single person in the entire world. And all of you have to follow it. And that is all there is to it, period, end of sentence. And then we come to a realization that, well, maybe not.
And you handled that realization beautifully. And I saw some of myself in that too. Like, okay, she's going to be all right.
She's going to be okay. And you know, the character of Carrie Ann, she never becomes her mother, open, completely open and able and just, you know, but she becomes who she is.
Yes.
You know, and is she a little more, you know, conventional, like in terms of like things have to be a certain way? Well, she maybe was always going to be that way, but at least she's now come to terms with I'm me and other people are other people. Mm-hmm. And we all don't have to do it the same way, and it's okay, you know? So,
absolutely.
Yeah. That's I'm glad you liked the
really
book.
Really interesting. Oh, I yeah. really enjoyed it. Okay. My favorite character was actually Dr. McKeithen.
Was it?
Because he was open-minded and embracing yes. of different ways and not yes. rigid. And yeah. He was fantastic.
Well, thank you so much. Mm-hmm. Wonderful. So if anyone wants to reach out to you, they go to 10littlerules.com. They can go to the contact page. Mm-hmm. And do you have a newsletter or anything else that people might want to be part of?
We sure do. You can sign up for the newsletter. You can also connect with us at 10 Little Rules, just on social media. I'm on LinkedIn, Instagram, Facebook, the usual.
All of it. Yeah.
So, and yes, newsletter, we do. We're going to be coming out monthly with that. And we also have a blog on the website. We'd love to hear from you anywhere you want to connect with us.
Super. Well, thank you so much, Carol, for being with me today. I am super, super excited that you came on the show.
Terry, thank you so much. This has been a blast. I love talking to you, with you about this.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to Online for Authors, where I, Terry M. Brown, author of character-driven fiction and host of the podcast, introduce readers to characters they'd love to invite to lunch. Tune in next Tuesday for another podcast episode.